Can I just play you something? This is a clip from one of our very first podcasts, like 7 years ago. The show, back then, it wasn't even really a show. It was just us fumbling around trying to understand what the heck was happening.
This is the Planet Money podcast. This is our third podcast, and this time we're going to answer questions about this unfolding financial crisis. I guess I should say it is Monday, September 15th at 10 minutes to 3. Lehman Brothers is declaring bankruptcy today. The stock market is down considerably.
Yeah, things got worse after that. And then over the course of our next, whatever, 630 podcast, things have gotten better. But now that things are better, in the back of my mind, I have this question. Are we missing something? Are we missing something right now? Because presumably, whatever the next economic mess is, the seeds of it are out there somewhere. If that's right, what is it? Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm David Kestenbaum.
And I'm Jacob Goldstein. Today on the show, worst case scenario. What is the worst it could be? We called up three smart economists and asked them, what are you worried about? What's keeping you up at night?
We talked to a Nobel Prize winner, a woman who wrote the book on 800 years of financial crises, and we talked to a retired guy living on a lake in Maine.
We'd like to say a quick thank you to one of our sponsors, Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can avoid trips to the post office. Buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package right from your computer. 500,000 small businesses already use Stamps.com. Right now, use the promo code MONEY for a special offer. A no-risk trial, plus a digital scale and free postage. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone, and type in MONEY. That's Stamps.com. Enter MONEY.
Should we say what we've actually been calling this podcast at the office?
Cover your ass? Cover our ass?
Yeah, as in, like, if the world falls apart tomorrow and everyone out there is like, yo, Planet Money, what the heck? Why were you guys reporting on the history of the price tag?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I thought it was a good show.
It was a really good show. But, you know, why weren't you talking about that time bomb out there that was ticking? If that happens, we will have this podcast to point to.
And just a few ground rules here. We are ruling out some really bad things that could happen, things like war.
Asteroids,
terrorism. There are truly bad things that could happen, but this is an economics show. We're going to focus on economics.
The challenge here, though, is that, you know, economic crises by their very nature are surprises. They're hard to predict because that is what makes them so bad, that people don't see them coming. Though, if you look back at the last one, some people did see it coming, like this guy.
I'm Robert Shiller, professor of economics, Yale University.
Can you add that you're a Nobel Prize winner and that you predicted the Great Recession?
You want me to say that? You're supposed to say that.
I just did.
Shiller won that Nobel Prize for studying bubbles. And he thinks bubbles have patterns, that it is possible to see when you are in a bubble that it's happening.
And he sees one.
Maybe. Right now.
Well, one thing, of course, is the high pricing of the stock market.
A potential stock market bubble. Your classic bubble.
Shiller developed a kind of formula for helping you figure out if you might be in a stock market bubble. It's a fancy version of this thing you might have heard of called the price-to-earnings ratio, the P/E ratio. It basically looks at how much stocks cost relative to how much the companies have actually been earning. So if that number's high, it means that people are pretty optimistic, maybe too optimistic, about the stock market. Shiller calls his number the CAPE index, like C-A-P-E.
I actually love the CAPE index.
Cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio. And it's a measure of how high the market is.
And what's it telling you right now?
It's high. The only times it's been higher were 1929 and 2000. And 2007 was about tied. But it crashed after that.
So you're saying the only times it's been this high has been right before market crashes?
Yeah, right. So I'm worried about that.
Is it telling us the market's going to crash?
Not with any certainty, you know. The problem is you don't have that many examples in history.
Shiller says it's not just this one stock market number that has him worried. There's other evidence that a bubble may be forming, which is that interest rates are super low, and they have been low for years, like really low. You can borrow money to buy a house at what are historically insanely low rates. The U.S. government can borrow money basically without paying any interest at all. This is true not just in the United States, but all over the world right now.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those things where you could imagine in a few years people will look back on this moment and say, the economy was really strange.
This is a very unusual circumstance. Right now, it's been called the new normal, but I don't know if it's normal.
Shiller thinks this is one of the things that's driving up the stock market. Low interest rates mean that people are earning almost nothing on their savings accounts. And if you try to buy a government treasury bond to try to make some money, they also pay almost no interest.
People love to talk about the power of compound interest. But the problem is, if there's no interest, there's no compound interest either. I think that people are unusually anxious about their futures right now. They want to save, but there aren't enough investment opportunities. So they end up just bidding up prices of what's out there. Bonds, stocks, housing, they're all, in the U.S., they're all kind of expensive. And maybe for much of the world.
And eventually you think something will crash. They will. The
prices. Well, I don't know for sure. I don't know anything for sure. But possibly, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Okay. So that from Robert Shiller is worst case scenario number one. If we were going to come up with a headline for it, like what would you actually see in the news if this happened? It might be triple bubble, stocks, bonds, real estate, plunge.
That's pretty good.
You think? I'm not that happy with it.
Okay. For worst case scenario number two, we called up Robert Flood. He's a professor at Notre Dame. On his website, under areas of interest, there is just one area of interest. It says extreme events. I asked him what keeps him up at night.
The thing I'm interested in, well, sort of interested in, I mean, now that I'm retired, I don't give a shit about some of this stuff, but I'm actually interested in how the world is going to cope with the dependency ratio.
The dependency ratio. In particular, the ratio of retired people to people who are still working. This ratio has been growing. In other words, for every person who's working, there are more and more retired people, partly because all the baby boomers are hitting retirement age. Also, people are just living longer.
What's happening is we're getting to have a lot more old people.
It's called the dependency ratio because retirees depend on working people to support them, to pay a big chunk of the expenses for programs like Social Security and Medicare. When that ratio gets higher, each working person has to produce more to shoulder more of the burden of all the extra retirees.
And it's not just Social Security and Medicare. A higher dependency ratio can also mean slower economic growth. It might mean higher interest rates. It might mean prices of things like stocks and houses start falling.
Does this actually keep you up at night?
Well, now that I'm an old guy, yeah. Certainly worry about what the buying power is going to be of my retirement savings, my Social Security, my annuity, all that.
This would not be some sudden crisis like we had back in 2008. It would be more like a string of bleak headlines, decade after decade. Like, Congress debates Social Security shortfall again.
Or, you know, latest pension failure, the biggest yet.
17 tips for living on less. Retirees share their secrets. I'd read that.
You totally would read that.
Flood says there are a few ways we could avoid those headlines.
One is what economists call productivity gains. And that is, if each working person produces more, makes more, they can support more retirees. You can, as a country, support more retirees with fewer workers. And in fact, that's what's been happening. Productivity has been going up, and so has the dependency ratio, and everything's been okay. But Flood says this may not continue. Productivity growth is already slowing down.
A second way to solve this problem would be immigration. There are millions of people who would love to come to the United States and work and pay taxes to support old people, people who want to sit on lakes.
You could also raise taxes, or one other thing.
What should we do about it?
First thing we should do is get me back to work. I'm just an example. No, seriously, I'm just an example.
If you could get people to go back to work or to work more years before they retired, then this whole looming crisis would just evaporate. But Flood says the tax system and the pension system are just not set up to encourage that. He is not going back to work.
You doing anything recreational today?
probably not. I'll probably just go ride my hand bicycle and go sit down by the lake.
Which is exactly the problem, right?
Yep.
I don't know, Jacob. None of this seems like what I was looking for. I mean, Schiller says things look bubbly. Maybe we've got this long-term but fixable retirement issue. And both of them I've sort of heard before.
Yeah, perversely, I was sort of hoping somebody would be like, look over there, there's an anvil that's about to crush us all.
We tried one more person, Carmen Reinhart. She's a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School and co-author of a book called This Time is Different, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly.
And when she looked over 800 years of financial crisis, she saw this really clear pattern. First, people borrow lots and lots of money. Then they can't pay it back. Then the banks they borrowed that money from collapse, and the banks take the whole economy down with them.
And she does see something like that happening today. She sees it in Brazil, the biggest economy in Latin America. She sees it in Turkey and in other emerging markets.
Those countries, for a while, were doing great. The businesses there borrowed a ton of money. But one key thing about those loans, a lot of them were in U.S. dollars. And that may become a problem. If the dollar gets stronger or if the local currencies get weaker, those businesses' debts suddenly get a lot bigger. That's actually happening already.
The Brazilian real has depreciated, you know, more than 40%, closer to 50%. The same dollar debts are now a bigger burden.
Are those companies that borrowed in dollars, are they screwed right now?
In varying degrees, yes.
There is more than $1 trillion worth of dollar-denominated debt in the developing world. So what would it mean for the United States if these foreign companies could not pay their debts, or if these whole economies run into trouble? How bad would that be for us here?
Probably not that bad. Look, I'm telling you where the likelihood of crises are.
I should apologize. It's not that I don't care about the people of Brazil or Turkey. It's just that my idea for the show was to find something really big and hidden, something that could trip up the whole world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if we were going to do the headline for the Carmen Reinhart worst case scenario, it would be like IMF chief heads to Rio as defaults spread through Brazil.
It might not even be on the front page. We kept trying. We did a kind of lightning round with Carmen Reinhart. We asked her about various economic worries that you hear about these days.
Okay, student debt.
It's big, but this is not going to bring down financial institutions.
Banks aren't going to collapse if students can't pay their college loans.
That's correct.
Remember, in order to get a big systemic crisis going, the problem needs to spread. And in the case of student loans, almost all the debt is held or guaranteed by the U.S. government. And if students can't pay back their loans, it's not going to bankrupt the government. It's not going to bring down the whole economy.
Next one, Greece. Should I worry about it affecting me?
Probably not.
She said Greece is actually similar to the student loan story. Most of Greece's debt is held by government institutions, held by the IMF. And if Greece doesn't pay them back, they'll be okay. You know, a Greek default just is not likely to spread throughout the economy.
This next one is a little bit obscure, but there was this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal about it titled, How the Next Financial Crisis Will Happen. It was about how banks were buying and selling fewer bonds.
And this issue is in the financial press all the time now. And they always use the same phrase, liquidity in the bond market.
We ran this by her.
Not enough liquidity in the bond market.
What does that mean?
I agree. Thank you.
Jacob, I give up. I can't think of anything.
Yeah, we even asked her about China, which I really thought could be a big one. But she said, even if China's economy does blow up, it's not likely to do much to the broader global economy.
We just could not come up with anything that seemed capable of giving us another great recession. Carmen Reinhart says she just doesn't see anything like that out there.
Look, the Great Recession has happened once since 1930s. They're not the kind of things that happen like clockwork. Because look at the factors that drove the U.S. to the Great Recession. And we had a multi-year festival in the housing market supported by the surge in subprime mortgages, and household indebtedness reached its highest levels historically. That's not where we are.
Jacob, where are we?
I mean, we're somewhere that's not that bad. I mean, what she's telling us is it is not always going to be 2007. We're not always going to be on the brink of a crisis.
But there are all these things to worry about. They're just not that big.
Yeah, or maybe they are that big and we just don't even know, right? I mean, there is maybe an anvil falling somewhere and we just don't see it yet.
Did we cover our ass?
No. I could bet all of the riches that I ever had.
Rushing the night like a shark, babe, would it be bad? Let us know what you think the next mess is going to be. You can send us email, planetmoney@npr.org. Our show today was produced by Nick Fountain. Thank you, Nick.
If you're looking for something else to listen to, try Alt Latino. It's a music show with everything from Mexican folk to electronica. You can find Alt Latino at npr.org and on the NPR One app. I'm Jacob Goldstein.
And I'm David Kestenbaum. Thanks for listening. Just that I